This work is copyrighted 2000 by K. Hooper. This recording is copyrighted 2002 by Recorded Books. Psychic Cassie Neal used to help the L.A. police catch killers until she made a terrible mistake and an innocent child died. She flees to a small North Carolina town for solitude, but even there her mysterious powers detect the lurking of an evil mind. And now, Stealing Shadows.
Prologue. Los Angeles, August 16th, 1998. Talk to me, Cassie. She was all but motionless in the straight-backed chair, head bowed so that her hair hid her face. Only her hands stirred, thin fingers lightly tracing and shaping the red tissue petals of the exquisitely handmade paper rose in her lap. I think he's moving, she whispered. Where is he moving? What can you see, Cassie? Detective Logan's voice was even and infinitely patient, betraying none of the anxiety and urgency that beaded his face with sweat and haunted his eyes. I'm not sure. From his position a few feet away, Logan's partner spoke in a low voice. Why is she so tentative with this one? Because he scares the shit out of her, Logan responded, equally quiet. Hell, he scares the shit out of me. He raised his voice. Cassie, concentrate, honey. What does he see?
Dark. It's just... it's dark.
All right. What is he thinking? She drew a shaky little breath, and those thin fingers trembled as they held and traced the paper rose.
I don't want to. It's so cold in his mind, and there are so many shadows. So many twisted shadows. Please, don't make me go any deeper. Don't make me touch them.
Logan's already grim face grew bleaker at the fear and revulsion in her voice, and it was his turn to draw a steadying breath. When he spoke, his voice was cool and certain. Cassie, listen to me. You have to go deeper. For the sake of that little girl, you have to. Do you understand?
Yes, she replied forlornly. I understand.
There was a moment of silence so absolute they could hear the soft crackle of the tissue paper she touched. Where is he, Cassie? What is he thinking?
He's safe. He knows he's safe.
Her head tilted to one side, as though she were listening to a distant voice.
The cops will never find him now.
Bastards.
Stupid bastards.
He left them all those clues and they never saw them. Logan didn't allow himself to be distracted by the disturbing information. Stop listening to him, Cassie. Look at what he's doing. Where he's going.
He's going to get the girl. To take her to his secret place. He's ready for her now. He's ready to...
Where is it? What's around him, Cassie?
It's dark. He's got her tied up. He's got her tied up in the back seat of a car. It's in a garage. He's getting into the car, starting the engine, backing out of the garage. Oh, I can hear her crying.
Don't listen, Logan insisted. Stay with him, Cassie. Tell me where he's going.
I don't know.
Her voice was desolate.
It's so dark. I can't see beyond the headlights.
Watch, Cassie. Look for landmarks. What kind of road is he on?
It's a blacktop. Two lanes. There are mailboxes. We're driving past mailboxes.
Good, Cassie. That's good. He glanced aside at his partner, who grimaced helplessly, then returned his attention to that dark, bent head. Keep looking. Keep watching. You have to tell us where he's going.
For a few moments, there was nothing but the sound of her breathing, quick and shallow. And then, abruptly, she said, "He's turning. The street sign says, Andover." Logan's partner moved a few steps away and began talking softly into a cell phone.
"Keep watching, Cassie. What do you see? Talk to me."
"It's so dark."
"I know. But keep watching."
"He's thinking horrible things."
"Don't listen. Don't go too deep, Cassie."
She lifted her head for the first time since they had begun, and Logan flinched. Her eyes were closed. He'd never seen such pallor in a human face before. Not a living face. And that pale, pale skin was stretched tautly over her bones.
"Cassie? Cassie, where are you?"
"Deep." Her voice sounded different, distant and almost hollow, as though it came from a bottomless well.
"Cassie, listen to me. You have to back off. Just see what he sees."
"It's like worms," she whispered, "feeding on rotting flesh, on a rotting soul."
"Cassie, back off. Back off now. Do you hear me?"
After several moments, she said, "Yes. All right." She was trembling visibly now, and he knew if he touched her, he would find her skin cold.
"What do you see? What does he see?"
"The road. No mailboxes now. Just winding road. He's getting tense. He's almost at his secret place."
"Watch, Cassie. Keep watching."
Several minutes passed, and then a frown tugged at her brows.
"Cassie?"
She shook her head. Logan stepped aside quickly and spoke in a low voice to his partner.
"Any luck with Andover, Paul?"
"There are 5 variations on the street name Andover within 200 miles. Bob, we can't even get to them all, much less cover them effectively. She has to give us something else."
"I don't know if she can."
"She has to try." Logan returned to Cassie.
"What do you see, Cassie? Talk to me."
In a tone that was almost dreamy now, she said, "There's a lake. I've seen the lights shining on the water. His secret place is near the lake. He thinks he'll dump her body there when he's done. Maybe." Logan looked swiftly at his partner, but Paul was already on the cell phone.
"What else, Cassie? What else can you tell me?"
"It's getting harder." Her voice became uncertain, shaky once more. "Harder to stay inside him. I'm so tired."
"I know, Cassie. But you have to keep trying. You have to keep us with him."
As always, she responded to his voice and his insistence, drawing on her pitifully meager reserves of strength to maintain a contact that revolted and terrified her. "I hear her. The little girl. She's crying. She's so afraid."
"Don't listen to her, Cassie. Just him."
"All right." She paused. "He's turning. It's a winding road now. A dirt road. I can see the lake sometimes through the trees."
"Do you see a house?"
"We're passing driveways, I think. There are houses all around. Houses on the lake.
Logan stepped aside as Paul gestured.
What?
There's only one Andover Street close to a lake. It's Lake Temple. Bob, it's only 15 miles away.
No wonder she's picking him up so well, Logan muttered. She's never been this deep before. Not inside this bastard. The team's moving.
I've got everybody en route, and we're chasing down a list of all the property owners on the lake. I'm told this is one of those places where the people name their houses, give them signs and everything. If we get really lucky...
Keep me advised, Logan said, and returned to Cassie.
Lake Temple,
she said, dreamy again. He likes that name. He thinks it's appropriate.
Don't listen to what he thinks, Cassie. Just watch. Tell me what he's doing. Where he's going.
5 minutes of silence lasted seemingly forever, and then she spoke suddenly.
We're turning. Into a driveway, I think.
You see any mailboxes?
No. No. I'm sorry.
Keep watching.
It's a steep driveway. Long. Winding down toward the lake. I see... I think there's a house ahead. Sometimes the headlights touch it.
Keep watching, Cassie. When you see the house, look for a sign. The house has a name.
There. There's the house.
Her voice quickened.
It has a sign near the door. The sign says... Retirement fund.
Logan blinked, then glanced at Paul, who mouthed, typical. Logan turned back to Cassie.
Talk to me, Cassie. Is he stopping the car? Is this house where he's going?
Cassie said, oh, wait. We're going past it. Oh. Oh, I see that there's a boathouse. I think it's a boathouse. I see...
What, Cassie? What do you see?
It's a weather vane on top, on the roof. I can see it moving in the breeze. I can hear it creaking.
Hear it? Cassie, has he stopped the car?
She seemed startled.
Oh. Oh, yes. He has. The lights are out. I can see the shape of the boathouse, the darkness of it. But he knows his way. He's getting her out of the back, carrying her into the boathouse. She's so little. She hardly weighs anything at all. Oh!
Cassie.
She's so afraid.
Cassie, listen to me. You can only help her by paying attention to what he's doing, where he's going.
He looked at his partner.
Where the hell are they?
Almost there. 5 minutes.
God damn it, she doesn't have 5 minutes.
They're moving as fast as they can, Bob. Cassie was breathing quickly.
Something's wrong.
Logan stared at her.
What?
I don't know. He feels different about this one. Sly, somehow, and almost amused. He means to give the cops something new. He... Oh. Oh, God. He has a knife. He wants to just cut her open.
Her voice was thready with grief and horror.
He wants to taste.
Cassie, listen to me. Get out. Get out now.
Logan's partner started forward. Bob, if she stays with him, she might be able to help us.
Logan shook his head, never taking his eyes off Cassie. If she stays with him and he kills the girl, it could pull her in too deep, into his frenzy. We'd lose them both. Cassie? Cassie, get out. Now, do it.
He reached over and plucked the tissue paper rose from her fingers. Cassie drew a shuddering breath, then slowly opened her eyes. They were so pale a gray they were like faint shadows on ice, strikingly surrounded by inky black lashes. Dark smudges of exhaustion lay under those eyes, and her voice shook with strain when she said, "Bob? Why did you..." Logan poured hot coffee from a thermos and handed her the cup. "Drink this."
"But..."
"You helped us all you could, Cassie. The rest is up to my people." She sipped the hot coffee, her eyes on the rose he still held.
"Tell them to hurry,"
she whispered. But it was nearly 10 long, long minutes later before the report came in, and Paul scowled at Cassie. The boathouse was empty. You missed the fork in the driveway. One branch led to the boathouse, and the other led to a cove less than 50 yards away, where a cabin cruiser was tied up. He was gone by the time we found it. The little girl was still warm. Logan quickly caught the cup that fell from Cassie's fingers and said, "Paul, shut up. She did her best." "Her best? She fucking missed it, Bob. There was no weather vane on top of the boathouse. There was a flag flying above the boat. That's what she saw moving in the wind. And the creaking she heard was the boat in the water. She couldn't tell the difference."
"It was dark," Cassie whispered.
Tears filled her eyes but didn't fall. Her shaking hands twisted together in her lap, and she breathed as though struggling against an oppressive weight crushing her lungs. Paul said, "5 minutes. We wasted 5 minutes going the wrong way, and that little girl's dead because of it. What am I supposed to tell her parents? That our famous psychic blew it?" "Paul, shut your goddamned mouth."
Logan looked back at Cassie.
"It wasn't your fault, Cassie."
His voice was certain,
but his eyes told her something else. Her own gaze fell, and she stared at the tissue rose he held, its delicate perfection emphasized by the blunt strength of his cop's hand. Such beauty to have been created by a monster. Sick fear coiled in the pit of her stomach and crawled on its belly through her mind, and she was barely aware of speaking aloud when she said huskily, "I can't do it. I can't do this anymore. I can't.
Cassie.
I can't. I can't. I can't." It was like a mantra to ward off the unbearable. And she whispered it over and over as she closed her eyes and shut out the mocking sight of the paper flower that now lived in her nightmares. Chapter 1. Ryan's Bluff, North Carolina. February 16th, 1999. As towns went, it didn't have much to boast of. It was about as broad as it was long, with more acreage than buildings. There was a scattering of churches and car lots and small stores that didn't call themselves boutiques, but charged enough for their plain little dresses to be considered just that. There was a main street with a grassy town square, enough banks to make a body wonder where all the riches were, and a drugstore so old it still had a soda fountain. Of course, there was also a computer store on Main Street, as well as two video stores and a satellite dish dealership. And just 2 miles away from the center of town was the very latest thing in movie multiplexes. So Ryan's Bluff was staring the coming millennium right in the eye. It was also, on most levels, a small southern town. So the politics were largely conservative. Church on Sunday was the norm. You couldn't buy liquor by the drink. And until the previous year, the same sheriff had been voted in at every election since 1970. In 1998, his son got the job. It was, therefore, a predictable town, by and large. Change came as reluctantly as heaven admitted sinners. There were few surprises, and even fewer shocks. That's what Ben Ryan would have said. What he believed, after a lifetime of knowing this place and with generations of family history at his back. This town and its inhabitants could never surprise him. That's what he believed.
Judge? Someone to see you.
Ben frowned at the intercom. Who is it, Janice?
Says her name is Cassie Neal. She doesn't have an appointment, but asks if you can spare a few minutes. She says it's important.
Ben's very efficient secretary was not easily persuaded by people without appointments, so he was surprised to hear a note almost of appeal in Janice's voice. Curious, he said, "Send her in." He was still jotting down notes and didn't look up immediately when the door opened. But even before Janice announced,
"Miss Neal, Judge,"
he felt the change in the room. It was as if an electrical current had been set loose, making his skin tingle and the fine hair on his body stir. He looked up and rose to his feet in the same instant, noting Janice's disconcerted expression as she gazed warily at the visitor. They were all three disconcerted. The visitor was functioning under an enormous level of stress. That was his first realization. He was accustomed to weighing people, and this young woman weighed in as someone carrying a burden too heavy for her. She was of average height, but too thin by a good 20 pounds, a fact obvious even under the bulky sweater she wore. She might have been pretty if her face hadn't been so thin. Her head was bowed a bit, as if her attention were focused entirely on the floor, and her shoulder-length straight black hair swept forward, as if to shelter her face, the long bangs all but hiding her eyes. Then she looked at him through those bangs, a quick, surprised glance darting warily upward, and he caught his breath. Her eyes were amazing, large, dark-lashed, and a shade of gray so pale and clear they were hypnotic and haunted. Ben had seen suffering before, but what he saw in this woman's eyes was something new in his experience. He found himself coming around his desk toward her. "Miss Neal, I'm Ben Ryan." His normal speaking voice had softened, so much so that the uncharacteristic gentleness startled him. Something else startled him. Ben was a southern lawyer, a one-time judge, and had been for years involved in politics at the local and state levels. Shaking hands with strangers was as natural to him as breathing, and sticking out his hand during an introduction was automatic. Yet somehow, this woman not only managed to elude shaking hands with him, she did it so smoothly and with such perfect practiced timing that there was nothing obvious in the avoidance of physical contact, and nothing at all awkward. He was not left with his hand hanging in the air, and was conscious of no slight. She simply circumvented the gesture by moving promptly toward his visitor's chair and glancing casually around at his office. "Judge Ryan." Her voice was low and beautifully modulated, the accent not Carolina. "Thank you for seeing me." When she looked at him doubtfully with another of those guarded, darting glances, he realized that she had probably expected him to be older, more judge-like. "My pleasure." He gestured to the chair, inviting her to sit, then looked toward the doorway with a lifted brow. "Thank you, Janice." Janice took her gaze off the visitor finally, and, still frowning slightly, backed out of the office and closed the door. Ben returned to his chair and sat down. "We're pretty informal around here," he told her. "I'm Ben." His voice, he noted in some surprise, was still gentle. A faint smile touched her lips. "I'm Cassie." Another quick glance at his face, and then she stared down at the hands clasped in her lap. Whatever she had come there to say, it was obviously not easy for her. "What can I do for you, Cassie?" She drew a breath and kept her gaze fixed on her hands.
"As I told your secretary,
I'm new in Ryan's Bluff. I've lived here a little less than 6 months. Even so, that's long enough to get a sense of who's respected in this town, who's apt to be listened to, even if what he says is unbelievable.
I'm flattered, he said,
very curious, but willing to let her get to it in her own time. She shook her head. I've done my homework. You're descended from the Ryans who founded this town. You left only to go to college and law school, returning here to practice. You became a much admired and highly respected district court judge, obviously at a young age, but chose to retire after only a few years because you felt your true vocation was as a prosecutor. You were elected district attorney for Salem County, and you are very involved in community affairs, as well as local and state politics. Your support would count for a lot.
My support in what?
She answered his question with a matter-of-fact one of her own. Do you believe in the paranormal? That was unexpected, and threw him for a moment.
The paranormal? You mean ghosts? UFOs? ESP?
Specifically, extrasensory perception, telepathy, precognition. Her voice remained calm, but she was sitting just a bit too stiffly, and her clasped fingers moved nervously. She darted another glance at him, so fleeting that all he caught was a flash of those pale eyes. Ben shrugged.
In theory, I've always thought it was garbage. In fact, I've never encountered anything to make me change my mind.
It was the fairly cynical mind common to many law enforcement officials, but he didn't add that. She didn't look discouraged. Are you willing to admit the possibility? To keep your mind open?
I hope I'm always willing to do that.
Ben could have told her that he himself was given to hunches, to intuitions he found difficult to explain rationally. But he said nothing, since it was a characteristic he hardly trusted. By training and inclination, he was a man of reason. Still utterly matter of fact, Cassie said, there's going to be a murder.
She had surprised him again, unpleasantly this time. I see. And you know that because you're psychic?
She grimaced, registering the disbelief and the suspicion of a prosecutor in his voice. Yes.
You can see the future?
No, but I tapped into the mind of the man who intends to commit a murder.
Even assuming I believe that, intentions don't always translate into actions.
This time they will. He will kill. Ben rubbed the back of his neck as he stared at her.
Maybe she was a kook. Or maybe not. Okay. Who's going to be murdered?
I don't know. I saw her face when he watched her, but I don't know who she is. Ben frowned.
When he watched her?
She hesitated, her thin face tightening. Then she said, I was in his mind for only a few seconds, seeing with his eyes, listening to his thoughts. He's been watching her, and he's decided to kill her. Soon.
Who is he?
I don't know.
Wait a minute. You claim you were inside the guy's head, but you don't know who he is?
No. She answered patiently, as though to an oft-repeated question. Identity isn't a conscious thought most of the time. He knows who he is, so it wasn't something he was thinking about. And I didn't see any part of him, not his hands or his clothing or his reflection in a mirror. I don't know who he is. I don't know what he looks like.
But you know he's going to kill someone. A woman?
Yes.
Ben drew a breath. Why didn't you go to the sheriff?
I did. Last week. He didn't believe me.
Which is why you came to me.
Yes. Ben picked up a pen and turned it in his fingers.
What do you expect me to do about it?
Believe me, she answered simply. For the first time, she looked squarely at him. Ben felt as if she had reached across the desk and placed her hand on him. It was a warm hand. He drew a breath, holding her gaze with his own.
And assuming I can bring myself to do that? Is there anything you can tell me that might stop this murder from taking place?
No. Not yet. She shook her head, unblinking. I may see more. I may not. The fact that I connected to him without holding something he had touched, without knowing him, is unusual. It must have been the intensity of his thoughts and plans, his eagerness, that reached out to me. Maybe I did touch something he had touched without knowing it. Or maybe he was physically nearby, and that's why I was able to steal the shadows. She broke off abruptly and looked down once more. He missed that warm hand. It was another surprise. Steal the shadows? Reluctantly, Cassie said, It's what I call it when I'm able to slip into a killer's mind and pick up bits and pieces of what he's thinking, planning. Their minds tend to be dark, filled with shadows. Her fingers were really working now, their nervous energy in stark contrast to her calm face and voice.
You've done this before?
She nodded.
Have you worked with the police?
In Los Angeles. Some of the police out there are quite open-minded about seeking the help of psychics, especially when those psychics never seek publicity. Ben leaned back in his chair and studied her. Waiter.
Los Angeles. So what brought you all the way across the country to our little town?
Her upward glance, he thought, was just a little wary once more. It put him on guard. An inheritance, she answered readily enough. My aunt died last year and left me a house in Ryan's Bluff. Ben frowned.
Who was your aunt?
Alexandra Melton. He was startled and knew it showed.
Miss Melton was a fairly well-known character in Ryan's Bluff.
She was quite a character in our family as well.
Word around here was that she broke with her family.
She was my mother's elder sister. They quarreled years ago when I was just a child. No one ever told me what it was about. I never saw Aunt Alex again. Being notified last year that she'd left me a house and some acreage in North Carolina was quite a shock.
So you decided to move 3,000 miles?
She hesitated. I don't know if it's permanent. I was tired of the city and wanted to spend some time in a place with an actual winter season.
The Melton place is pretty isolated.
Yes, but I don't mind that. It's been very peaceful.
Until now.
Until now. After a moment, Ben said,
Give me the name and number of somebody I can talk to in L.A. Somebody you've worked with.
She gave him the name of Detective Robert Logan and his number, and Ben wrote down the information. Does that mean you're willing to believe me? She asked.
It means I'm interested. It means I'll do my best to keep an open mind.
He shook his head.
I'm not going to lie to you, Cassie. Your claim to be able to get inside the heads of killers is something I'm having a hard time with.
I understand that. It's alien to most people. Ben circled the name and number he'd written on the legal pad before him.
In the meantime, is there anything else you can tell me about this would-be murderer?
She gave him another one of those direct looks that was a warm touch. I can tell you he's never killed before. At least, not a human being.
He might have killed something else.
Maybe. Have there been any unexplained animal deaths or disappearances around here?
You mean recently? Not that I know of.
It could have been recent. It's more likely, though, that he did that sort of thing as a child.
If he did, he got away with it.
Probably. It's the kind of thing that often gets dismissed when young boys do it, unless it's extremely frequent or especially vicious. Not many people realize it's one of the earliest signs of homicidal tendencies,
particularly among serial killers. Along with, if I remember correctly, unnaturally prolonged bedwetting and starting fires.
Cassie nodded. Did you take one of the FBI courses for law enforcement officials?
Yes, shortly after I got this job. How about you?
She smiled slightly. No, I've just picked up information along the way. I think it helped me, at least a little, to understand the clinical terms and explanations.
For monsters?
She nodded again.
I'm sorry, Ben said.
Her eyes widened slightly, and then her gaze fell. Never mind. I've taken up enough of your time today. Thanks again for seeing me, and for keeping an open mind. They both rose, but a faint gesture from Cassie kept Ben on his side of the desk. Still, he wasn't quite ready to let her go.
Wait.
He looked at her intently.
Your name. Is it short for Cassandra?
Yes. Softly, he said.
She tried to warn them, and nobody believed her.
My mother was psychic. She knew I'd be. Sometimes I think she gave me that name just to make certain I'd go through life prepared for doubt and scorn. A reminder I'd always carry with me.
I'm sorry, he said again.
Don't be. We all have our crosses. She shrugged and began to turn away, then paused when he spoke again.
That other Cassandra knew she couldn't change what would happen. She knew she wouldn't be believed. It destroyed her. Don't let it destroy you, Cassie.
Without looking at him, she said, something else that other Cassandra knew. She knew her own fate, and she couldn't escape it.
Do you?
Know my own fate? Yes.
I thought you couldn't predict the future.
Just mine. Just my fate. He felt a little chill.
It's something you want to escape?
Cassie went to the door and paused once again, this time with her hand on the doorknob. She glanced back at him. Yes. But I can't. I ran almost 3,000 miles, and it wasn't far enough.
Cassie.
But she was gone, slipping through the door and closing it quietly behind her. Alone again, Ben sat down in his chair and for a moment gazed down absently at the name and number he'd written on his legal pad. Then he buzzed his secretary.
Janice, there's some research I need you to do ASAP. But first, there's a cop in L.A. I need to talk to.
She walks like a whore. Those short skirts make it worse. The way she twitches her ass when she walks. Disgusting. And just look at her. Flirting with him. Tossing her hair and batting her eyes. Whore. You whore. I thought you were different. Just another $20 whore. Not even worth that. Not even that. Matt Dunbar came from a long line of lawmen that stretched all the way back to a Texas Ranger who'd roamed the West in 1840, and it was a heritage he was proud of. He was also proud of the way he looked in his crisp sheriff's uniform. He worked out religiously in his basement exercise room 6 days a week to make damn sure no excess flab hung out over his belt. No way was he going to become the familiar caricature of a fat, indolent Southern sheriff. He'd even gone to some effort to lose his accent, though the results were, he had to admit, less than what he'd been aiming for. A lover had once told him he had a drawl that stretched out lazy like a cat in the sun. It was a simile he liked. So maybe he drawled a bit when he told Becky Smith that next time she ought not to park right smack in front of the fire hydrant, even if she did plan to just run in and out of the drugstore. As a stern official warning, it lacked something.
"Oh, I'm sorry, Sheriff."
She smiled widely at him and pushed glossy brown hair back over her shoulder in a gesture that was a little flirtatious.
"But I was only gone a couple of minutes. I promise. I'll move it right now."
He started to tell her she didn't have to move all that fast. But then he saw Ben Ryan's Jeep pull in behind his cruiser, so he touched his hat courteously to Becky and walked back to meet his boyhood friend, occasional poker buddy, and sometimes pain in the ass. Today, Ben looked like the last. "Matt, when did you talk to Cassie Neal?" Ben asked as he got out of the Jeep. The sheriff leaned back against the Jeep's front fender and crossed his arms over his chest. "She came into the office the end of last week. Thursday, I think."
"You mean she went running to you with that wild story?"
"Are you so sure it's wild?"
"Oh, for Christ's sake, Ben.
Look, I was doubtful, too. But did you bother to check her out? Because I did."
"And?"
"And the LAPD detective I talked to says there are half a dozen multiple killers behind bars today because of Cassie Neal. And that's just in his jurisdiction."
Matt narrowed his eyes. "Then how come I never heard of her?"
Ben shook his head. "There's been very little press, and nothing national. The way she wanted it, apparently. Which I count as a point in her favor. The cop told me his superiors were delighted that she insisted the department take the credit and keep her out of it. Naturally, they weren't too eager to admit that they'd used the human version of a crystal ball to track down bad guys." Matt grunted and gazed absently at the peaceful scene of downtown Ryan's Bluff on a mild Tuesday afternoon. "I just don't buy that psychic bullshit, Ben. Last time I checked, neither did you."
"I'm still not sure. But I think we'd better pay attention to what the lady says."
"Just in case?"
"Just in case."
After a moment, Matt shrugged.
"Okay. You tell me what I'm supposed to do about the lady's so-called warning. She says somebody's going to die. That somebody is a woman. Only she doesn't know who. All she knows is that the woman is possibly dark-haired, possibly between 20 and 35, medium height and build, possibly, which narrows down the possible victim to, oh, a quarter of the area's female population, give or take a few hundred. And our helpful psychic knows even less about the aspiring murderer. Don't even have a possible on him, except that he's male. Eliminating you and me, and every man over 60 just on logical grounds, that leaves me with, what, a few hundred conceivable suspects inside the town limits? What the hell do I do with that, Ben?"
"I don't know. But there must be something we can do."
"What? Panic a town by announcing one of our ladies is being stalked and doesn't know it?"
"No, of course not."
Matt sighed. "My gut says to have somebody watch Cassie Neal and watch her close. Maybe there's a good reason she's so sure there's going to be a murder." Ben stared at him in disbelief. "You can't be serious. If she weighs 100 pounds, I'd be surprised."
What? Killers have to have muscles? You know better, Ben.
I just meant she's too fragile to have that in her.
The sheriff cocked an eyebrow. Fragile?
Don't even start with me.
Ben could feel heat rise in his face, as aware of his uncharacteristic credulity as his friend was, but unwilling to examine it at the moment. Matt hid a grin.
Okay. Okay. It's just I've never heard you use that word before.
Never mind my words. What are we going to do about this, Matt?
Wait. Nothing else we can do.
If your fragile psychic comes up with something useful, great. If not, I guess we twiddle our thumbs and wait for a body to turn up.
Chapter 2. February 18th, 1999. He's done it. Ben pushed himself up onto an elbow and turned on the lamp beside his bed. The clock told him it was 5:30 in the morning. Christ, it was still dark. He wedged the phone between ear and shoulder.
Who's done what? And do you know what time it is?
He's killed her, Cassie Neal said softly, starkly.
Ben woke up. He shoved the covers aside and sat up on the edge of the bed.
Are you sure?
Yes.
She drew a breath.
It happened hours ago. There was nothing anyone could do, so I waited to call you. As long as I could.
Ben wondered what it was like to be awake and alone through the long, dark hours of the night, and aware of horrors. The professional part of him pushed that aside to say,
You should have called me right away. Evidence
won't be changed by the passing of a few hours. Not what little he left behind. Cassie sounded impossibly weary. But you're right. I should have called immediately. I'm sorry.
Ben drew a breath.
Do you know where?
Yes, I think so. There's an old abandoned barn on the north end of town, about 5 miles out.
I know it. Used to be a stockyard there.
He left her in the woods behind that barn. He didn't kill her there, but it's where he left her. I think she'll be easy to find. He didn't bury the body or try to hide it in any way. In fact, he posed her somehow.
Posed her?
Sat her up with her back against a tree. He was very careful to get the look just right. It must mean something.
Cassie's voice faded on the last words, and she sighed.
I don't know what. I'm sorry. I'm tired.
Ben hesitated, then said,
I'll go take a look.
Before you call the sheriff? There was wry understanding in her tone.
Ben was unwilling to admit that he didn't want to look like an even more gullible fool if this turned out to be a false alarm. So he merely said,
I'll probably want to talk to you later.
I'll be here.
Cassie hung up quietly.
Dawn was just lightening the sky when Ben parked his jeep at the old Pittman stockyard. He turned on the flashlight he'd brought along in order to pick his way around the barn and through a ragged gap in what was left of the fence to the woods in back of the place. It was quiet. Too quiet. He didn't go very far into the woods before halting and directing the flashlight in a slow arc ahead. These were hardwood trees, bare of leaves in February, the undergrowth scant, so he could see quite well. He hadn't really believed she would be there. When the light fell on her, Ben heard his own sharply indrawn breath. Just as Cassie had described, The victim sat with her back against a tree, facing the barn, easily visible. Her eyes were open, her head tilted a bit to one side, and her lips slightly parted, as though she had paused in saying something to listen politely to a companion. Her hands lay folded in her lap, palms up. She was fully dressed. Ben knew her. Becky Smith. A girl barely 20 who had worked, at the drugstore in town while she attended the local community college. She had wanted to be a teacher. Her throat was cut from ear to ear.
God damn it, Ben, you know better.
The sheriff was furious, and it showed. Like you wouldn't have done the exact same thing? Ben shook his head. As convincing as she sounded, Matt, I didn't really believe I was going to find anything. So, yes, I walked within 12 feet of the body. I didn't realize it was a crime scene until it was too late. But I didn't touch her or disturb anything.
Why the hell didn't you call me before coming out here?
Ben glanced past the sheriff, toward the rear of the barn, where most of the dozen or so deputies Matt had brought were carefully combing the ground. The sun was well up now, and Becky's body had been taken away. Her body being zipped into the black bag was a sight he would not soon forget. Ben?
We've been through this, Matt. I didn't want to look like a jackass if I dragged you out here and there was nothing to find.
So you came on your own? Unarmed? What if the bastard hadn't finished his work, Ben? Jesus, she was hardly cold.
I wish I had found him here. I'm not a 20-year-old girl.
And he might have had a gun. Did you think of that? Did you think at all?
Normally, Ben wouldn't have allowed his friend to censure him, loudly, in a fairly public arena. But he knew Matt well enough to recognize that the sheriff was badly shaken. Before today, the last murder in Salem County had occurred 10 years back, when Thomas Byrd had come home early from work to find another man keeping his bed warm. To say nothing of Mrs. Byrd, it had been an entirely understandable crime of passion. This crime was everything but understandable. Matt, can we please get past my reckless actions and move on?
Matt's mouth tightened, but he nodded.
Okay. Now, since you were elected by the good citizens of Salem County to catch criminals, and I was elected to prosecute them, I'd say we have work to do.
Yeah. Matt turned his head to look toward the activity behind the barn and scowled.
And the first thing I want to do is talk to Cassie Neal.
Ben hesitated, then said,
You and your people have to finish up here. Why don't I go get Miss Neal and bring her to the station? I'm very interested in what she has to say.
Matt turned his scowl to his friend. It isn't your place to investigate crimes, Ben. Your job starts when I catch the bastard.
My job is made a lot easier if I'm involved early on and you know it.
Maybe. And maybe in this case your involvement would be a bad idea. You aren't exactly impartial, are you?
What the hell do you mean by that?
What I mean is that you obviously have a soft spot for your fragile so-called psychic. I won't let you get in my way, Ben.
It took a moment, but then Ben got it. Ah, I see. You think Cassie Neal killed Becky Smith.
And you obviously don't.
I know she didn't.
Ben heard the words come out of his mouth and was more than a little surprised by them. Matt didn't seem to be.
Uh-huh. And you know that because... I told you. She doesn't have it in her to kill someone. Especially not like that. Come on, Matt. It takes a particular brand of brutality to cut a woman's throat from ear to ear. Don't tell me you saw that in Cassie.
The first thing you learn as a cop is that the most likely explanation is probably the right one.
Cassie Neal did a hell of a good job describing a crime scene. I say it's because she'd seen it.
I agree. But I don't think she was here.
The psychic bullshit. Yeah, right.
Matt, try to keep an open mind.
Once more, Ben glanced past the sheriff at the uniformed people searching for clues, then added quietly,
"You know those hunches I used to get when we were kids?"
"Yeah."
"Well, I've got one now. I've got a hunch that this is just the beginning."
He returned his gaze to Matt's face.
"And the psychic bullshit may be the only thing we've got going for us."
The old Melton place consisted of a Victorian-style house and various outbuildings that sat on 20 acres more than 10 miles from town. Alexandra Melton had bought the place back in 1976, arriving in Ryan's Bluff from the West Coast with, apparently, plenty of money and nobody but herself to spend it on. She had been quite a character. Her outfit of choice had been jeans and T-shirts, often paired with unusual hats or flowing silk scarves. Still beautiful right up until her death from pneumonia at 60-plus the previous year, she had black hair that had been touched by silver only in a narrow streak above her left temple, and her figure had remained striking enough to attract admiring eyes whenever she came into town, which was rarely. Once a month for supplies, no more often. The odd thing was that Alex Melton had struck most as a warm and outgoing woman, with a brisk, no-nonsense manner and a big heart. Yet she had made it plain from the outset that she didn't want or need visitors, and that she had no intention of becoming involved in community affairs. Or affairs of the heart, apparently. Ben had heard the stories. Because she had been so beautiful, more than one man had made an attempt over the years, only to be firmly, if kindly, rebuffed. Word had it that a woman or two had also tried and received the same decisive refusal. It apparently wasn't a question of which way Alex Melton swung, but the fact that she didn't swing at all. Ben thought of all that as his Jeep wound its way up the long dirt drive to the house that now belonged to Alex's niece. She didn't mind the isolation, she'd said. It was peaceful. Or had been. She'd also said that she had run 3,000 miles to escape the fate she saw for herself, only to fail. Ben didn't know if he believed Cassie Neal saw her own fate, but he was certain she was running away from something. And another one of his hunches told him that understanding what that was would be important to him. He parked the Jeep in the circular drive in front of the house and got out. For a moment, he just studied the house, noting that it was being slowly redone on the outside. New shutters, new paint on the railing of the wraparound porch, and he thought the front door, with its oval leaded glass inset, had also been refinished. The house hadn't been in bad shape before, but the new work definitely improved it. Ben knocked on the door, and Cassie opened it, holding a paintbrush in one hand.
"Hi," he said. "I would say good morning, but it isn't."
"No, it isn't. Come in." She stepped back and opened the door wider. Just as in his office, she looked at him directly, only in flickering glances. But this time, with her hair tied back away from her face, and with her dressed in jeans and a close-fitting thermal shirt, he got a much better look at her. She wasn't just fragile. She was almost ethereal. "The coffee's hot. Would you like some?" If she was even conscious of his scrutiny, Cassie didn't seem bothered by it.
"Please."
He followed her through an open living area with little furniture, where she'd been painting a small table on newspapers spread out in the center of the room, and into the kitchen. Cassie took a moment to rinse her paintbrush and leave it in the sink, then washed her hands and poured coffee for them both. "Black, right?"
"Right." "More ESP?"
"No. Just a guess." She handed him the cup without touching his fingers, then took her own to the scarred old wooden table in the center of the room. "Do you mind if we sit in here?
I need to let the paint fumes in the other room dissipate.
No problem.
He joined her, sitting in the chair on the other side of the table.
I always liked this room.
It was warm and cheery, sunny with numerous windows and brightly painted in yellow. You knew my aunt, then?
Slightly. I came out here a few times.
He smiled.
I wanted her vote. Besides, she was an interesting lady.
Cassie sipped her coffee, her gaze on the cup. So I've been told. There's lots of her stuff packed away. Sooner or later, I'll have to go through it. Looks like she kept a journal, as well as all her correspondence. Maybe I'll finally get to know her myself. I'm not in a hurry about that, though. There's so much else to do. Ben had a hunch that she had put off going through her aunt's things, not because of being busy elsewhere, but simply because she wasn't yet ready to open herself up, even to the personality and memories of a dead woman. From what the L.A. detective had told him, Cassie had been worse than walking wounded when she had retreated here nearly 6 months before. Detective Logan believed she had been about a breath away from a complete physical, emotional, and mental breakdown, the result of living through one nightmare too many. But Ben accepted her explanation, at least for the moment, and said only,
"You're renovating the house?"
"No, just updating a bit." Her glance flickered toward his face, then fell again. "I like working with my hands, working with wood."
"Touching beautiful things because you can't touch people?"
That brought her gaze to his face, and this time it stayed. There were smudges of exhaustion underneath her pale eyes, and he could read nothing in them. Yet he still felt the warmth as clearly as though she had reached out and laid her hand upon him. It was an unnerving sensation, yet one he knew he had wanted to feel again. "That's too simple," she said.
"Is it? You avoid physical contact with people. Or is it just me?"
Cassie shook her head. "It's uncomfortable for me. I'm a touch telepath. It's very difficult for me to block out someone else's thoughts and emotions when I'm in physical contact with them." Her shoulders lifted and fell.
"So you just avoid touch?"
She looked back at her cup. "There are things in the human mind that are not meant to be seen or touched. Things seldom even acknowledged by our conscious selves. Fantasies, impulses, rages, hatreds, primitive instincts. They're buried deep, usually. And that's where they belong, in the darkest parts of our minds."
"The parts you can see?"
Again she shrugged. "I've seen enough. Too much. I try not to look."
"Except when murderers blast their way in?"
"I tried to shut him out, believe me. I didn't want to know what he was going to do. What he did."
"But if there was even a chance you might stop him?"
"I didn't, did I? Stop him. I went to the sheriff. I went to you. I even opened myself up and crawled into his darkest places. But it didn't stop him. It never stops them."
"That's not what Detective Logan told me."
Cassie shook her head. "They're caught eventually. Maybe I can help with that. Maybe not. But people still die. And there's not a single goddamned thing I can do to change that." Her voice was soft.
"So you ran here, is that it? Here in this isolated house near a small town where you could hope for peace?"
"Don't I have a right to peace? Doesn't everyone?"
"Yes. But Cassie, you can't ignore what you see any more than I can ignore it if I saw someone stabbed on a street corner. I would have to do what I could to help. So do you."
She drew a breath. "I've spent 10 years doing what I could to help. I'm tired. I just want to be left alone.
Do you think he'll leave you alone?
She was silent.
Cassie?
No, she whispered. Ben wished she would look at him again, but her gaze seemed welded to her coffee cup.
Then help us. Becky Smith was just 20, Cassie. A college student who loved kids and wanted to be a teacher. She deserved her life. She deserved her chance. Help us catch the bastard who took that away from her.
You don't know what you're asking.
I have some idea. I know it'll take a lot out of you. But we need your help. We have to do whatever it takes to get this guy before he gets away. Or before he kills again.
Finally, her gaze lifted to meet his, and there was something lurking in the depths of her eyes that made him flinch. Something small and hurting. All right, Cassie said quietly. I'll get my jacket.
So? The sheriff wasn't openly hostile, but close. Let's have it.
They were in Matt's office, seated side by side in the visitors' chairs in front of the old slate-top desk that had been his father's, and the sheriff was already in a nasty mood because his people had found absolutely nothing useful at the crime scene. And he didn't believe in psychic bullshit. He just didn't. I can't tell you much more than I already have, Cassie said. The killer is male.
How can you be so sure of that? Ben asked. You said identity isn't a conscious thing. Is gender?
Sometimes. But in this case, she avoided his gaze, fixing hers on the hands clasped in her lap. When he was watching her, planning what he would do to her, he was aware of his erection.
It was the sheriff who reddened slightly and shifted in his chair. But his voice was sharp when he said, "This wasn't a sexual attack."
"They're always sexual attacks."
"This woman was not touched sexually," he insisted. "Preliminary reports say no semen was found anywhere on or near the body. For Christ's sake, she still had her panties on."
"That doesn't matter. He was in a state of sexual excitement when he stalked her, and he achieved release when he killed her."
"My God, you were in his mind during all that," Ben said, startled.
"Yes. When he first went after her, and then again after he'd tied her up and was ready to hurt her. That time I was with him for a few minutes. It didn't take long, and just as he killed her, I managed to break away." Ben wondered what it must be like to observe, maybe even experience intimately, the orgasm of an insane killer, and thought it was undoubtedly one memory Cassie would happily part with. For the first time, he began to truly understand what lay behind her haunted eyes. Monsters, indeed. The sheriff had something else on his mind.
"So he tied her up, did he?"
"Not with ropes," Cassie said. "A belt, I think, for her wrists. He didn't tie her ankles. He made her sit with her legs apart."
"Why?" Ben asked.
"It was part of the pose, somehow. Part of what he needed to see. He was taunting her. He kept putting the knife between her legs and threatening to put it inside her. He wanted her to be afraid. She was. She was terrified."
"You know this because you saw it," Matt said.
"Yes."
"Through his eyes?"
"Yes, Sheriff." The sheriff was looking at her squarely, his gaze narrowed in suspicion.
"I'm having a hard time understanding this, Miss Neal. You claim not to know the murderer. So how is it you're able to see what he does? Know what he was feeling? Do you always pick up the thoughts and plans of strangers? Like a bad feeling picks up stray radio signals? She shook her head and explained what she had explained many times before. Maybe I touched something he touched. That's most likely. Touched something like what? Like a door he'd just passed through? Something on the shelf of a store? A theater seat he'd been in the night before? Or I might have bumped against him in the grocery store. Our eyes might have met for a moment on the streets, but... Ben interrupted. Eyes meeting? Something so impersonal? Cassie's head turned slightly toward him, but her gaze remained on her hands. It's a question of connecting. I've never been able to read anyone without some kind of connection. It's almost always a physical touch, either of the person or something the person came into contact with recently. An object, a bit of clothing.
But eyes meeting? Ben repeated. Two strangers on opposite street corners? It could be as brief and simple as that?
Ben, do you mind? The sheriff said.
It's an important point, Matt. If all she needed to make this connection was a glance.
Sourly, the sheriff said, I know goddamn well what it means, Ben. A town full of suspects. Assuming, of course, that I believe any of this bullshit. So far, I haven't heard a good reason to.
Cassie knew someone would be murdered, Ben said. She told both of us a couple of days ago. She called me this morning to tell me it had happened. And where?
Yeah. And you know what I think about that. Maybe she was able to do that because she'd been there. Maybe she knew the details because she killed Becky Smith.
Cassie lifted her gaze for the first time.
No, I didn't kill her. I didn't even know her. Then a frown flitted across her brow. But neither did he, really.
Ben leaned forward. What? He didn't know her?
Cassie turned her head and looked at him. No. He'd been watching her. He knew who she was. He thought he knew what she was.
What do you mean, what she was?
Somehow, she wasn't what he thought. He was disappointed in her. Maybe because of something she'd said or done. He was angry at her, enraged. Yet, I didn't get a sense of intimate knowledge. And I don't believe she had known him in any real sense before he grabbed her.
She didn't know who he was?
Cassie shook her head. I can't be sure, but I don't think so. She might have recognized him as someone she'd seen around town, maybe even on a regular basis. But I didn't get the sense that she really knew him. He might have done something to disguise himself, of course. Though that doesn't seem likely if he knew he was going to kill her. As for what she saw, she was pleading with him not to hurt her, but she never said his name. If she'd known his name, if she'd recognized him, she probably would have.
You get sound, too? The sheriff said.
Ben swore impatiently, but Cassie's gaze returned to him, and a faint smile without real amusement curved her mouth. Sometimes it's just like turning on a television set.
Turn it on now, he invited. Let's see what the bastard's doing at the moment.
I wish it were that easy. His chair creaked angrily as he leaned back.
Yeah, I thought so. Not quite like turning on a TV, I guess.
It was obviously an attitude Cassie had encountered before. I'm sorry, Sheriff. I wish I could just flip a switch or say a magic word and climb inside this monster's head to get the answers you need. She drew a breath. If he kills again, I'll probably connect again.
Murderers like this one tend to get progressively more wound up and excited when the lust to kill starts building in them. Those powerful emotions broadcast strongly. Now he's probably in a cooling down period. Very calm. Maybe tired. His mind is quiet. Contained. It isn't reaching out. And without a physical connection, I can't reach out to him.
Ben glanced at Matt, but said nothing.
There was a moment of silence, and then the sheriff said grimly,
"Cooling off period is the phrase those behavioral sciences boys at Quantico use. Miss Neal, are you trying to tell us we've got a serial killer here? On the basis of one murder?"
Cassie hesitated visibly. "I can't say for sure. I only know there's something abnormal about him. About the way his mind works. And she was a stranger to him, or as good as. People who kill are almost always driven by rage, hate, jealousy, greed, even fear. People who kill the way he did, using a knife, getting the blood on him, that can only be done in an extreme emotional state. It's hard to feel so strongly toward a virtual stranger, for someone whose life never touched yours in any meaningful sense. But serial killers, they have their